Thank you for downloading this Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire podcast. And as a special thank you for you, we've got a special deal just for you. Beer 52 shipped themed monthly boxes of small batch craft beer straight to your door. You can get £10 off a case of 8 delicious exclusive craft beers selected to your preferences and the award-winning Ferment magazine and a snack using our code PROPER at beer52.com. So you get 8 exclusive hand-selected beers this month. It's Norwegian craft beers. The 100-page Ferment magazine and a snack, free next-day delivery, and flexible monthly subscription. All that for £14 in your first month at beer52.com.
Radio Yorkshire, your home of rugby league. You know it makes sense.
Let's head to the AJ Bell Stadium in Salford. It's a second home for Radio Yorkshire's Matt Horton. Matt, very windy at Salford this afternoon, but as you say, the wind's going in the right direction.
Yes, the wind is blowing in the right direction at the AJ Bell this afternoon, Rich. It's blowing from the M60 direction instead of blowing from the ship canal direction. So the odour is quite pleasant here at the AJ Bell this afternoon. If it blows in the wrong way, it can be pretty vile, but... Castleford last night, Rich, were absolutely superb. Sean Wayne in the press conference said afterwards that Wigan shouldn't be beaten like that at places like Castleford, and he wasn't happy with the performance of the 17 players that he stuck out there last night. But yes, they had their problems. They lost Gelly nearly doors within the first 10 minutes, not to return back. Ben Flower looks like he's got a season ender as well with an Achilles problem. George Williams didn't come out for the second half. So, yeah, they had the problems last night, Wigan. But do you know what, Rich? I don't care.
Well, they tried to get 17 men on the pitch at one point.
He tried to get an extra man on the pitch at one point as well. But everybody loves Wigan being beat, Rich. And I'll take that all day if they're going to get towelled by 50 points. I'll sit there and watch it every week if I can.
Everyone does enjoy Wigan being beat, bar Wigan fans, obviously.
Well, yeah, but who cares about Wigan
fans? I think Wigan are just slightly above Leeds in the division of teams people like to see beaten.
Yeah.
Although he's very close.
It's close, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But it sounded like another virtuoso performance from Castleford and scoring pretty much from the first play of the game.
Yeah. Last week, Rich, they got hit the first... quickly checks in his book because he was there. They got hit in the first 13 minutes and they were 18 points to nil down. Last night, Cass were 12 points up inside the first 10 minutes. So they basically did exactly the opposite of what they did at the KCOM last Sunday. They got the big start, got the noses in front, and Wigan never really got going. And funnily enough, it was the simbining of Frank Paul Nuasala which kind of sparked him into life. And it looked at that stage when Powell went over, it was like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen here. After the Powell try, some stupid Wigan fans let a big red smoke bomb off in the railway end, and the smoke was still bellowing out that much. Morgan Escarre missed the kick. It was a perfectly kickable kick. I'm not sure he could see the post, Escarre. But Cass just got the composure back, got those two tries before half-time. Mike McMeekin will never score an easier try in his rugby league career from 30 metres out. The Wigan defence literally just parted. It was like the Red Sea parting. And McMeekin just went, oh, I'll have some of this. Took the burners on the black dot. And, well, Wigan were constantly on the back foot. When they came out second half, and you know that they didn't have George Williams there, you know they were onto a hiding to nothing. Sean O'Loughlin was pretty much anonymous for most of the game as well. And they simply didn't turn up. And Tony Smith said on Friday at the KCOM in his press conference, you don't turn up with your A game in Super League, you get beat. And that's what happened.
I guess the one thing that's been impressive about Cass this season, they lost at Salford, they came back and won the week after. They've lost two in a row. They've come back and absolutely smashed, demolished Wigan last night. They appear to, when something goes wrong, they learn from it fairly sharpish. I mean, you could say last week against Hull, had Luke Gale not gone off, they would have won that game with the goal kicking, but they didn't, so c'est la vie.
Yeah, but when Luke Gale went off, when Liam Watts went down, they were 18 points down already.
Yeah.
So what else could have happened from there? They were looking like they were going to be on the back end of a lot of points. But as Darrell says, they've lost three games by a combined total of 7 points this season.
Which isn't bad, is it, really?
Of course, they lost by a point here to Salford a few weeks ago, the game that me and Scully did. They lost by 4 points on Easter Monday, and they lost by the two at the KCOM last week. So Cass... really are good. I think Cass are going to be there or thereabouts when it comes to semi-final football, and I'd love to see them in the semi-finals, maybe have a good run in the Challenge Cup, get to Wembley. I hope Cass pick a trophy up this year, because they're doing it right. Darrell's developed that team. He's got the people in there he wants. Junior Moores is just a nuisance when he comes onto the pitch. Sina Lefeo has added an extra dimension to them as well. And they are a really, really good side. And I love to go and watch Cass. I could quite happily watch Cass every week if Mark Wilson had let me.
You know where my colours are nailed, but they are a great team to watch, Castleford. And top of the table, we're, what, 11 games away, rather, from the split. And there is a split developing between the top five and the rest of the table. You obviously saw the team who were second, or were top, going into that game yesterday. Second now in Hull FC, who picked up 3 wins in a row, beating Warrington on Friday night. And that looked fairly comfortable, didn't it?
Yeah, it was in the end for Hull. Warrington, again, didn't really get going. And for me, it's the presence of Kevin Brown that's out there. And Kevin Brown's out. He's had one good game against Brisbane. Yes, scored with his first touch of the ball in that game, but since then, Warrington without Kevin Brown are a better side than Warrington with Kevin Brown.
Hang on, Matt, let me stop you there. Apologies. Is that Kevin Brown who's just been called up to the England squad this morning?
Yeah, I think, I tell you what, there's not many Warrington fans losing sleep at the fact Kevin Brown's going to be in Australia next weekend, because it'll get Patton and Gidley back together at half-back again. Of course, Darrell Clark isn't on the plane, so they'll get a chance to bring Darrell Clark back in. Ratchford's a big loss for Warrington next weekend, of course. Big local derby against St Helens to contend with at the Halliwell Jones on Friday night as well, but no, Hull were well worth it. A couple of decisions that could have gone a different way. The try that was chalked off for Jack Hughes just after half-time, if that had been given, and if the on-field decision had been upheld, shall we say, then it would have been 14-all, kick to come, and Warrington had got a bit of momentum off that first play of the second half, and maybe, who knows? You can't really tell now, can you? It's Sunday, it's gone, it's dusted, it's today's fish and chip paper, and Warrington on 9 points now are going to have a real big fight just to get into the 8, and their chances of finishing in the 4 are decreasing every week at the moment.
I know we're all very blinkered in supporting our teams when we're at the grounds. I hope some of those Hull fans, though, when they watch back Sikamanu almost breaking Ryan Atkins' arm, thinking, why did we boo Ryan Atkins the rest of the game there, yeah, when our man tried to injure him?
That was a shocker from Sikamanu, and the daft thing is now, I bet he's already halfway to Australia, because he's meant to be captaining Tonga in the test match next weekend, and he's going to possibly land in Sydney and then say, look, you need to Skype Redall at some point on in the early hours of Wednesday morning. You're going to need to be on a Skype conversation with Redall, and they're going to get 24,000 miles air miles in him, and he's not even going to set foot on a rugby league pitch.
It's all good fun, isn't it? It's all good
fun. And there was the other one that a lot of Hull fans went off about as well, which was the tackle by Kevin Brown just before half time on Jansen Turgut. And they're all saying, oh, Liam Watts got a 4-match ban for that. It was nothing like the tackle that Liam Watts did on Jason Battieri back in round 2.
Was that an argument that you were having at home, or did you?
Yes, it was one.
Did
it was an argument that could have happened at home, yeah, but take a step back and be diplomatic, and just those are the times when I just need to nod and say yes, love, no, love, 3 bags full, love, you know what I mean?
At least you're honest.
Yeah.
She's not listening, is she?
No, she's at work.
If it's good, we'll tell you. If it's rubbish, we'll tell you. This is Radio Yorkshire, the only place for honest opinions on the greatest game.
Of course, the big news for Wakefield, I don't know if you've seen this, David Fifita shaved his beard off as well. That's the big news.
How will we recognise him then? He's so small and unassuming.
Well, his brother had a decent game for Cronulla the other day. I was watching that.
And just been called up for Australia as well in place of Aaron Woods. So, again, a heritage player, but don't mention that.
Well, while you say that, you've led me on to this now. So we'll talk about the rest of this weekend in a moment. But I know you've heard this, Phil, and I know you haven't, Craig. So this is Wayne Bennett, the England coach, in a report from 7 News down under in Australia.
He helped New Zealand to World Cup glory and copped flak. The knockers resurfaced when he answered England's SOS.
I don't look for the headlines, but I get plenty of them. But it doesn't worry me, because I know what I'm doing. I know I'm doing it for the right reasons.
That means England's power brokers won't, and don't tell him who to pick.
No, there's no pressure on me for that. They just want the best teams, or the best players playing for England. That's what I want.
One of them, Titan Chris McQueen, son of an English father, was originally disinterested. Now he too is a Bennett convert.
We're short on edge forwards, quality edge forwards. And in my opinion, McQueen was better than anybody else that was available.
Same goes for Chris Hyington. The 35-year-old Shark wants a World Cup swan song. As he has for four decades, he'll continue rising with the birds, toiling to ensure England eliminates dumb mistakes.
They just give so much, but they give it all away by just making that error that's unforced, that moment of madness, that moment of over-aggression.
Perhaps a pointed message to George Burgess, who's been rubbed out for four games.
Everybody knows shoulder charge are gone. Just can't do them.
The penalty for not joining Wayne's World is harsh.
If we don't get that playing smarter, better, then we won't make a dent on the competition.
Pat Welch, 7 News.
There's Wayne Bennett speaking to Pat Welch of 7 News down in Australia. We've got a lack of quality edge forwards, gentlemen.
Look, you know, who are we to argue with, you know, arguably the greatest coach the game has ever had, you know, but thankfully Scully's not here, that's all my answer to that question will be. But, you know, you've got to ask, you know, on a regular basis, how many games has he seen over here, you know, and my argument is would it have been beneficial to take a couple of young players and have a look at them, you know, he's saying we've got lack of quality, but then arguably, you know, our best back rowers aren't fit at the moment anyhow, who hopefully are going to be fit for the World Cup. You know, in Ben Curry, whose form last year was sensational. And then John Bateman, you know, he's, in my opinion, our best back rower. So them two, you know, already, you know, to say Liam Farrell isn't quality, I think that's, you know, disrespectful in my opinion, because I think Liam Farrell's a very, very good player. You know, and although I don't get as passionate and as angry, shall we say, as Scully does on the fact, but I think he's right, you know, I think I'd rather see a team that had Liam Farrell in it, who's 100% English and would die for the cause, than have McQueen, who you see a tweet of last week when he's watching the Aussies take wickets, loving that the Aussies are beating the English. Now, that doesn't sit well with me, and, you know, you can't change your loyalties just like that. It's not like club rugby where, you know, they're paying your bills, and I understand the rules, and look, I'm not... You play to with the rules and you get the best team you can, but... You know, I'm a proud Englishman. I never represented my country at a professional level. I did it many times at the amateur level. You know, and I'd have given anything to do that. And I think there's players in our competition who would, you know, do anything in their powers to play for the country. And I think it takes a little bit of the cream off it for me when we see, you know. And I don't mean to be disrespectful when I say second rate, because they're obviously very, very good players. But have they chosen us because they can't progress at that next level? And I would certainly say McQueen has, in my opinion.
Well, this is the thing, I guess, and I know where Scully's coming from, and I know a lot of people agreed with him last week, but if the heritage players were big superstar names, so to speak, would that lessen the blow to people? If Jonathan Thurston suddenly was English, as my obviously ridiculous example was on Monday, it would be a bit different than... You know, McQueen and Hines and London.
Well, I know Phil's a massive advocate of the international game, and rightly so, because it should be the pinnacle of any sport, should be the national game. But I can see where you're coming from, and obviously the question is yes. You know, there's a win at a prize, and you know, would we take Jonathan Thurston? Of course we would. I just think when you sign a professional form in your first contract, it should state who do you want to play for internationally, and then that's your choice. And for me, you stick with that. And if you want to play for Australia and you're not good enough, you can't have a second choice of choosing England or Ireland or Wales. I just think it devalues a little bit. And yes, we want the national game to be all singing and all dancing, and we'd love the World Cup to be the pinnacle of rugby league. At the moment, we aren't there. We all know that state of origin is the pinnacle of rugby league. But I just think I'd rather see a team full of people who are 100% proud to wear that top, you know, the England with the England rose on it, rather than someone who said, well, I can't play for Australia, so I'll choose England.
And the thing we know, Phil, is, of course, the Australians and the New Zealanders in both codes of rugby are the worst at this for stealing players from... Oh, stealing's the wrong word, isn't it? But taking players who are eligible and could improve both codes of rugby in the South Sea Islands, like Tonga, Fiji, Samoa and whatever. And I guess we're just trying to catch up with them.
I think there's two distinct issues here. One is who is eligible, and the second is, do they deserve to be selected? Now, I think the important thing about the Wayne Bennett interview is at least we have some rationale behind why he selected these players. We may not agree that Chris McQueen is the sort of player we perhaps would like to see playing for England. I would say anybody that has played representative rugby doesn't qualify unless it's for a Tier 2 or Tier 3 nation. Because we have to acknowledge that there are only 800 players that are paid professionals in the world, and that we need to build up nations outside of Australia, New Zealand and England. And if that means that you played for Australia, and like Tyson Frizzell will be eligible perhaps in the next World Cup when he isn't being selected for Australia to play for Wales, who he's got a direct link with and he's already played for. I don't have a problem with that at all, I think. But as a Tier 1 nation, you have a responsibility to the rest of the international world. And the players that you do pick, I think, shouldn't have ever had affiliations elsewhere. That's why I don't have a problem with Chris Hyington. If Wayne Bennett thinks he's good enough and he can do a job as coach, that's what he's paid to do. He's not played for anybody else. He's not played for New South Wales. He's actually played for England before in 2011. There is a commitment there. I don't have a problem with that. I think, again, somebody like, and we used his example last Monday, and Adam Cuthbertson, who's been playing really, really well this year for Leeds, is at the top of the stats. He's never played for any other representative nation. He is eligible by the fact that his father was born in Warrington. If he commits himself to play for England and that's his first representative nation, I don't care what accent he's got. I think that's playing with the rules, and we would be stupid not to do it. And to say, you know, Andrew Fifita is playing for Australia, he's absolutely entitled to do so, but he's not from Australia. I don't have a problem with that. That's his first acknowledged nation. So I think eligibility is one thing. Who is selected and why is another one. And I just think it's really interesting that we've now got a reason why McQueen's been selected. That's now something we can debate.
Yeah.
If Wayne Bennett's saying he is the best edge player that's available, we could now have a debate about whether he is or not. Last week we couldn't, and my argument again with the RFL is that is an interview that should have been put up at the time of selection, not a week later. It's a shame that that minute and 17 seconds or whatever it is, which for Wayne Bennett is a lifetime, was on a 7 exclusive a week after the team was picked over here. But at least you can understand why he's picked those players, even if you don't agree with it.
Indeed, indeed. And speaking of the squad, it's a shame that George Williams won't get to show what he can do to the audience down under. I think he picked up an injury yesterday for Wigan against Castleford. Are we surprised that Kevin Brown's been picked based on his form?
Well, obviously, we just heard Matt before, you know, your interview there with Matt, and Matt sees him on a weekly basis, doesn't he? So, you know, he's the best place to answer that question. And, you know, the games that I've seen him in, I watched him in the first one against the Broncos and was like, wow, you know, what a great signing. But the games that I've been on the TV and the games I've been at, you know, Kevin Brown has been a little bit below the standards that Kevin Brown sets. And, you know, as we said, we're picking players who, you know, should be picked on form, you know. But again, you know, Wayne Bennett is thousands of miles away. You know, he's obviously getting words in his ears from Paul Anderson and blah, blah, blah. You know, and they still think, obviously, that he's the next cab off the rank. So that's the way they've gone. Whether it's the right call, we'll probably see next week in the game, won't we?
I think this is the interesting one for Monday night, and, you know, want to keep some of the powder dry for that. But here's the dilemma for Wayne Bennett. Two of his first choice selections, Gareth Widdop and George Williams, who would likely form a half-back partnership if they were fit, are not available. Who now have we gone to? We've gone to a Warrington pairing. Where are Warrington in the table? You ask most fans who watch rugby league in Super League week in, week out. That's not an international pairing at the moment on form. So where does he go? If he'd gone to a heritage player, a Blake Austin, a Trent Hodgkinson, would there have been the same outcry? You've got to balance your best team on the field with who is available. We're now compromising ourselves in some respects by taking Kevin Brown, who is out of form, and Stephen Ratchford, who might be being played out of position.
He's going to say he doesn't even play in the half.
Exactly.
This
year. So what is the option? And if we went down the route of a heritage player, would we all be going, that's a better selection than the one that we've got? Well, it's a balancing act.
You know, obviously we can say this because Scoey isn't here, but Mark Snead's form of late has been very good for Hull.
Yep.
You know, Hull has been playing very well. And arguably, Richie Myler has been Catalan's best player on a regular basis. Now, for me, you know, Richie Myler's been playing really, really well, you know, and he's got a shot, you know. And for me, I think on form, and that's all you can pick it on, the same as Mark Snead, they're both playing better in the halves than Ratchford, who hasn't played in the halves, and Kevin Brown, who is playing in the halves. So, strange one.
Can we get Albert Kelly in the England squad? Is he early? Him and Snead together. They were quite good on Friday, right? Weren't they, for Hull?
Yeah, obviously I wasn't at the game, but I have watched it on the rerun, and yeah, they complement each other very, very well. And You know, Albert Kelly has added a different dimension to Hull's attack, and I just think after those couple of blips that Hull had, obviously the Leeds game and the Salford game where they lost heavily at home, you know, they've regrouped really well and come back strong, and you know, still missing a few players, but some youngsters came in on Friday night and did a really good job for them, and they're, you know, looking pretty second in the table.
It's a really odd season, isn't it? We're quite rightly lauding a whole performance that was very, very impressive, but this is a team that conceded 106 points at home in two games. We're looking at Wigan last night, who were probably the worst they played for a while, and how that must have hurt Sean Wayne, losing at Castleford of all places to his nemesis Darryl Powell. It wasn't quite a enjoy your coach trip moment, but he even said we shouldn't be losing at places like this. I'm sorry, you're losing at the team that's top of the table. But nobody is really putting together a consistent run of form. Even Castleford, who were magnificent last night, were coming out of two consecutive defeats. So, yeah, Hull were very, very impressive. Warrington was surprising. Again, he's not here, so we can mention it. Perhaps Scully would say, take a Declan Patton to Australia with you. Give the kid a chance. He wasn't great on Friday night. Don't tell Scully. Mark Snead outplayed him.
He's taken over this programme. He's not even here.
I know. He'll be listening. We'll be in for it on Monday.
My phone's beeping as we speak. It'll be him.
I've turned mine off for that very reason.
Speaking of Leeds, what happened on Thursday night, Phil? I had one eye on it because I was working, but it didn't appear to be a great game regardless of the result for Huddersfield over Leeds.
It was a great result for Huddersfield. They played wet weather football magnificently. They had every incentive to play the way they did with what had happened against Swinton in the Cup, and we shouldn't rule out either that they wanted to play for Jennifer Davey. It's a massive loss for the club. All the players felt it, particularly the senior players. Jermaine McGilvery was very emotional afterwards when he spoke about it. Danny Brough reinstored to captain. It obviously made a huge difference to him and the responsibility he enjoyed. Kicked a 40-20 in the first set of the game. They just played the conditions really well. I go back again, and it is part an excuse. This period is a really difficult one to manage for every squad, no matter who you play. And it doesn't really matter the opposition. It's the number of games that you play and who you're playing that isn't fully fit or is still carrying knocks from the week before. That was Leeds' down game. They weren't good. It wasn't a great spectacle, but I cannot take anything away from Huddersfield in a four-day turnaround to play as well as they did. That was their highlight performance over the Easter period. Leeds is low light.
Well, if only Danny Brough was in this.
Dewsbury is in Scotland.
I know, I've beaten, I can't understand the word they say.
The thing about Danny Brough, and again, it comes back to heritage players, I actually think that Danny Brough's greatest contribution to the sport is what he's done with Scotland and made them the fourth-ranked nation. By him constantly committing to them, I think we had a side in the Four Nations that were credible. They should at least be aiming for the quarterfinals in the World Cup. I think we've got the same with some Welsh players. Craig mentioned some of the second rowers who might be available to England if they're hopefully all fit come the end of the season. Stevie Ward's another one to throw in there. He's eligible for Wales as well. And yes, I know it would be a marriage of convenience, but to have Stevie Ward playing for Wales in a World Cup, it's a Tier 2 nation, it's not a Tier 1 one, and obviously might be then eligible to play for England if we ever knew what the international fixture is. So this is another point that's really important. Why would you commit as an international player if you don't know what the fixtures are? That if you've got the Scotland, Wales, Ireland fixtures mapped out for you for the next 4 years, you can make a commitment. But if you don't know who Scotland and Wales are going to be playing, then you might play for Wales 1 year. You'd have to play for England the next year because they'd be the only one with fixtures. Why isn't this an international weekend? Why, instead of watching Catalan Dragons at Wakefield, are we not watching the full French international team playing Wales under John Keir's tutorship? He'll be on the sideline here for Wakefield, and we'd be here doing it for Radio Yorkshire, but we'd be covering a Celtic international. Isn't that what we should be watching this afternoon?
I don't think I need to say any more there, do I? Because obviously the answer is yes. Although France do have a warm-up game against Jamaica coming up ahead of the World Cup, which will be tasty, having seen Jamaica against Wales last year.
So. I would just say on that one, I'd rather be sat in Cardiff rather than Wakefield. So that would be my input into the conversation. But I think Phil is exactly right. You know, we look at, you know, other sports around us, and we look at rugby union and we look at football, but we talk about international game being the pinnacle. In all those sports, it is. And it takes priority over club level, where in rugby league, it doesn't work like that, and it's ludicrous. You know, we want to develop that international game, and we want to be so that this World Cup is a fabulous event every 4 years, and not just an afterthought of let's, as Phil says, there's a game in Australia at the end of the month in the World Cup. Oh, I tell you what, I'll put my hand up for Ireland, or I'll put my hand up for Wales. That has to be wrong. We've got to build it. And if we're going to say, look, I'm not 100% set on this idea of the England boys flying out to Australia mid-season, but it's done. So what we do is we cancel the fixtures and we have a full international break. And as you say, Wales play against Ireland or Scotland, and France are involved in it. And then we bring the lesser nations in, who are starting to build up teams, you know, Spain and Moldova and Belgium and whoever. And we build that into the calendar. And then it is something that the players, as Phil said, can put in there. And it is, you know, a break where some of these younger players, you know, who are eligible for these countries might put their hand up. You know, and it gives them experience as well, and that has to be the way forward. We've got to build on the international game, because it's a poor second, even in England at the moment.
I think there's two other things as well. Is it's the international game that's going to get us more television coverage. It's the international game that will bring us in new sponsors. But I would cite the example of Regan Grace at the moment. We're all crowing about how magnificently he is doing for St Helens. He played for Wales before he played for Saints. That can't be right.
Want your say on all things rugby league? Radio Yorkshire, every Monday, 6 to 8pm. Opinions welcome, but be prepared to fight your corner.
It's full-time scores this afternoon. Excuse me. It is Wakefield 30, Catalan 10, you know that. Salford 30, Widnes 10. In the Championship, Dewsbury 24, Oldham 28, Featherstone 25, Sheffield 14, Hull Kingston Rovers 24, Rochdale 16, and at London Broncos 38, Swinton 28, and in League One, Hunslet 18, Whitehaven 19. Whitehaven unbeaten in all four away games so far this season, I was reading earlier. Right, let's head back to the Beaumont Legal Stadium, where Craig Murdoch, our match commentator, is still there. It sounded during that first half, Craig, there wasn't much of an atmosphere there, but Joe Rundle made that break and the whole game turned around based on that.
Yeah, it did. You know, I think obviously 99.99% of the fans here are supporting Trinity, and they were up against it for large periods of that first half. They didn't set off the game well at all, you know, mistake off the kickoff, and then the game didn't really get out of their own half for literally 30 minutes. They were up against it. They did really well not to only concede the one try, and could have conceded others, but the defence in the end has won them the game.
And we look back on that match. I thought for a moment it was only going to be players with double-barrelled surnames who were allowed to score twice Wakefield until Craig Hubie at the end. But Mason Cater-Brown and Ben Jones-Bishop did well, especially having been moved out of position early in the game.
Yeah, obviously, you know, the rotation. Cater-Brown started the game in the centre, and, you know, he's equally at home on the wing. So, you know, it's no big deal for him to do that. And obviously he got some opportunities when the Dragons were down to 12 men, but both him and, you know, Jones Bishop, the major asset that both of them have is they've got pace to burn, and, you know, you see that when they get the opportunity. So a couple of, you know, really good acrobatic tries from Caton Brown, and then the Jones Bishop special from 80 metres where, you know, he's almost toying with the defenders with another couple of gears to go through. You know, it must be beautiful to have pace to burn like some of the wingers have these days, and, you know, he knew that as soon as he picked the ball up that it was a try under the black dot.
And of course, we talked about it pre-match, how important a win was today, especially after those three defeats at Easter. A good performance from Wakefield. It sounded like the Catalans, just their ill-discipline did them in at the end.
Yeah, you could say that. Obviously, down to 12 men for three periods of the game, three different players in the bin. But, you know, you'd think it was a dirty game, but it wasn't. You know, it was scrappy. Look, it wasn't the best game of rugby I've ever seen, but it was. You know, it had enough in it to keep us watching. And as Phil alluded to, you know, this Wakefield team deserve better support than what they're getting at this moment in time. And, you know, in my opinion, it's the best Super League side that Wakefield have had. And they're showing that, you know, they're a match. You know, they're just outside the top five. You know, I said earlier, you know, you look at Wakefield's season, what's, you know, 12 games? Is that 6-6 or is it 7-5?
Oh, you've tested me now. No, I think it's 6-6. I think you're right.
Yeah, no, so teams, yeah, in front of me here, Wakefield have played 11. Yeah, 6-12 now, 6-6. You know, apart from they got a bit of a touch-up against Castleford, didn't they? And Leeds give them a touch-up. Apart from that, you know, Wakefield could have won all them other games. They can make a case that Wakefield are you know, up there with the big boys this season. They're really competitive. It's a really good side, and you know, they've still got a chance. And I'm sure, you know, people will say, oh, Wakefield's goal, you know, is to be in the top eight. Yes, it is. But I think they're aiming higher than that. You know, they're on the edges of the top four, and it wouldn't be a major surprise, certainly in my opinion, if come the end of the season, that they could be in one of those places.
Ben has been on Facebook. We can win the next three as well. Wakefield till I die, he says. Oh, just take another couple of wins, it's all right. See, a win and confidence is back among the Wakefield supporters. But as you say, six from 12. Bar losing at Castleford, which, you know, bigger teams than Wakefield with bigger budgets have gone to Castleford and been smashed by bigger scores than Wakefield. And that really poor performance against Leeds. I guess the question is now, and Phil asked it at the end of the commentary, and you've just mentioned it there, and it's the same for Salford, it's the same to an extent for Huddersfield, although they're not having a great season, but it's how do Wakefield and Salford get more people through the gates, because obviously both clubs playing much better rugby than they have in the recent Super League seasons.
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it? Because, you know, Michael Carter and the Good Doctor are doing everything they can to back the coaches. The coaches are providing the entertainment and getting, look, at the end of the day, as a fan, you want to watch winning teams, don't you? And, you know, both those sides are very, very competitive in Super League this year, and, you know, they can't do much more. You know, they can't do much more. And, you know, obviously we would love it if there was 10,000, 12,000 people here on a regular basis watching, you know, a successful Trinity side. But unfortunately there isn't. All we can say is come down and watch, because they are good to watch. You know, they are giving it a real go, and they are, you know, one of the best sides in the competition this year.
I know people talk about the cost, and it's easier for me to say sat here on a Sunday and I'm not paying to go to the games. But, you know, Wakefield got big crowds a few years ago when tickets were given away probably at less than cost price, and yeah, that's ended up in trouble again. There's only, I guess, Michael Carter and you know, the Good Doctor, as you say, at Salford. They can't give tickets away because they've still got to run the clubs as a business. Otherwise, they'll be in the mire that other clubs have, and those clubs have been in the past.
Yeah, it's disrespectful, in my opinion, for the 4,000 fans who are willing to pay.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a hardcore fans who come in and pay their. You know, I'm like you, Rich. We're in a lucky position that we get paid, or certainly I do. I get paid to come here and watch this and try and explain it in my best way to the people who are listening at home. We're in that situation, you know, where we don't have to pay to come and watch this. But, you know, these true Wakefield fans, and, you know, there will be lots of listening at home who are, you know, should I go, shouldn't I go? Come down and see, because they are playing a really good brand of rugby. They have got some exciting players. You know, they are good to watch. And more importantly, they are competitive and they have got a chance. You know, would it be a major surprise if Wakefield got to a grand final? You would say, yes, it would be, or a Challenge Cup final. But, you know, they're making big strides, I believe. And this team they've got this year, you know, can mix it on their day with any team in the competition.
Well, that's the Wakefield game. But I guess the Catalans are such a difficult team to read. I know that the Super League competition is a strange run this year as well, but Catalans, they had that good run, then they've lost their last two. I don't know what Laurent Fresneau can do, because he's got a very talented squad there, but they just seem to implode sometimes, and I guess partly today they did, and they've got a big game next weekend against the Leeds Rhino side without a couple of players who are, of course, on England duty.
Yeah, I don't, you know, looking back now after the game, I'm not sure what the tactics of the Dragons were today. You know, they came with obviously a game plan of, we're going to be bigger and we're going to be stronger and we're going to bully you. But, you know, after 30 minutes, when that hasn't worked, you need to have a plan B, and you need to, you know, be more versatile than that. And I think, you know, they thought that they could get over the top of Wakefield today, and it didn't work. Wakefield's forwards stood up to the onslaught of the bigger units from the Dragons, and then when that didn't work, they didn't look to have anything else. The, you know, Myler and Walsh didn't really link with Inu and Thornley. I don't remember Inu and Thornley having much ball. You know, Yaha and Dupont, the wings, never really got any running opportunities. You know, and the fantastic talent that is Tony Gizio at the back was never in the game. So, you know, yes, credit to Wakefield for not allowing them to do that, but I also think it was very route one from Catalan, and they didn't, you know, almost try to get those outside backs in the game today.
See, a final bit on today's game. A couple of tweets from Stephen, who's a big Wakefield fan. He's asked us if we know anything about the injury to Tom Johnson. I guess we don't at the moment, but as you were saying in commentary, I guess it's a positive that he was only on one crutch. It doesn't look as if it's hopefully not too serious.
Yeah, and he watched the second half from, you know, in front of stand down to our left in front of the hospitality suite, so in the players' area there. So, you know, it's obviously not too serious because he hasn't gone off to hospital. You know, I'm hoping it's just a dead leg or something like that. Obviously, I will find out very soon, because, you know, I've got a little bit of involvement in Tom's game and his future. So I don't think it's too serious. Maybe a couple of weeks, and maybe even, you know, just a dead leg, and we could even see Tom next week. Hopefully, that's best case scenario. Probably more realistic. He may be on the sidelines for a couple of weeks. But my first impressions is it's nothing too season ending anyway.
I think it's got. And he also asks, he doesn't understand why Mason Caton-Brown wasn't the man of the match, but it sounds like Craig Hubie, you mentioned in commentary, is your man of the match and was given that by the sponsors as well. It seems, and I think he's been one of Wakefield's better players this year, he's almost back to the player he was in his pomp at Castleford. Things didn't work out for him for whatever reason at Huddersfield, but it appears at Wakefield it's working for him again.
Yeah, I think the biggest... I can understand... What was the guy's name who texted in? Sorry,
Stephen.
Stephen, I can understand Stephen saying, you know, you score a hat-trick, you should be there or thereabouts for the man of the match. But, you know, Mason Caton-Brown's involvement was those three tries. He came up with a big error that almost got Catalan back into the game. But, you know, he finished his tries really well. But, you know, Craig Hubie came on after about 16, 17, maybe 20 minutes, and he played the next 60. So for a front rower to play 60 minutes straight, you know, in this sort of competition, after the Easter period that they've just had, you know, he's obviously a great effort. But not only that, you know, his defence was first rate, and then his running of the ball in the second half was really strong. And he was the catalyst that enabled Caton-Brown to get those three tries, in my opinion, because he, you know, not single-handedly, but he was the main man that stood up to the big forwards of the Dragons and got Wakefield on the front foot.
There you go, Stephen. There's your answer. I look at the bottom of the table now, which is nice to see not Wakefield down there. It makes a change from recent season. But witness rock bottom of the table. They've lost again today, admittedly to an impressive Salford side who are third in Super League after round 12. But witness having beaten St Helens last week, just they can't get a run together, can they?
No, they can't. And as you say, you look at the bottom of the table, you know, Warrington, Lee, Huddersfield and Widnes, you know, you'd still, even though Warrington aren't playing that great, you still think they've got a run in them, or I do anyway. You know, I think they're going to win a few games, and, you know, whether, I think the top four is certainly gone for Warrington. I think, can they get in the eight? They need to start picking up some results very, very quickly, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did, you know. But I think, you know, Widnes, even though Huddersfield had that really good performance, or should I say, they had the victory on Friday night, and it was Thursday night, and that was pivotal to them. They needed to get that victory at all costs. But I think Widnes, Huddersfield and Lee, I think they're going to be in those middle eights come the split.
Well, let's hope that next week, next Saturday, live on Radio Yorkshire, Lee Sports Village, Wakefield make it two wins in a row.
And that's the big test, isn't it, Rich?
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about, I think that's the test for Wakefield now. We've seen, you know, last week they should have beat Warrington. Arguably, they could have beat Wigan 2 weeks ago. Against those bigger sides, they are performing and doing really well. Even though they're at the wrong side of the scoreboard, their test is to go to somewhere where you would expect them to win and get the victory against a Lee side that is desperate for a victory. So that's a big game for Wakefield next week. It's one they should win. And let's hope from a Yorkshire point of view they do win.
Let's hope so. Craig, I know you're going to go and speak to Chris Chester, so I'll let you go off and do that. But final question. We're 12 rounds into Super League. I'm just going to throw this one out at you, completely random. Name the grand finalists.
Oh, do you know what I would love? You know, and just I want to put something in that I forgot to do before as well. Not everybody wants Wigan to lose. I've still got a little soft spot for them as well, you know. Even though I'm Yorkshire through and through now, you know, I did have a little bit of, you know, certainly one or two games for the cherry and white. So I don't want them to lose. I want them to be competitive. You know what, Rich? I'd love nothing more than a Salford v Castleford grand final. I think that would be amazing for the game. Is that going to happen? I'm not so sure. You know, I think, and I'd love it. We've got to look at, in my opinion, it's really hard to have that crystal ball, and I will get to answer your question in a minute. It's about injuries, isn't it? You know, Wigan have got this knack of somehow being able to cope with injuries better than every other team. You know, Castleford have had a good run of late where all the key players have been available for them. At some point in the season, they will pick up a couple of injuries. Same with Salford. Salford have had a nucleus of 20 players, and, you know, they haven't had to go outside of that yet. Whether they can still pick up victories when they do. Who knows? I'd love it if it was a Castleford-Salford grand final. I think Castleford will get there. And then, in my opinion, it's a toss-up between the black and whites and Wigan. And I think that'll be the grand final. Castleford and rather Wigan or Hull.
Well, I didn't want to say it because I know Phil was beside you earlier, but we all still like it when Leeds lose over Wigan, don't we? Apart from weak Leeds fans, if they're listening. I'm only joking. Craig, thank you very much. And we shall, no doubt, be speaking to you again next week.
We certainly will. Thanks, Rich.
Craig Murdoch there, live from the Beaumont Legal Stadium, Bellevue, after Wakefield picked up the win 30-10 against the Catalan Dragons in Super League.